pardon the interruption, but I'm Mike Wilbon. I read today that Mel Kiper doesn't go to the bathroom during the draft. Tony, I don't believe that. Do you?
Hold on. I'm going to the bathroom.
Hey.
No.
Having that in here? You got a space suit you got on, like one of those race car deals?
It's one of those things with a semi-catheter situation.
No, we don't. Come on now.
What you have to do. You have to man up when you do a show like this.
Yeah,
for
all
a half
30
hour.
Minutes, sure.
Welcome to PTI, boys and girls. In today's episode, Kevin Garnett gets suspended. The Lakers school Kevin Durant. And we will ask Mel Kiper about his bathroom habits.
We have to.
But we begin today with Kevin Garnett. The Celtics star has been suspended for the upcoming Game 2 against Miami because of his elbow to Miami's Quentin Richardson's head during Game 1. After the game, Richardson, who was later fined $25,000 for his part in the incident, called both Garnett and Paul Pierce, quote, actresses, unquote. Wilbon, was Garnett's suspension justified?
Yes, you can't elbow somebody in the head, period. And no interpretation here. And the surprising thing to me watching this in real time was that Kevin Garnett, who is, forget the trash talking, Kevin Garnett is a really, really, really smart guy. He has played more minutes in the NBA than just about everybody except like 10 people in history. He's too veteran a guy with too much stature to find himself in that situation and getting himself thrown out of game two. I don't understand why he would get involved in this, but it is justified that he's suspended.
The elbow was delivered with murderous intent. It might not have hit with murderous intent,
right,
but it was
connected.
Delivered that way. And you're right. He's a veteran. He's a star. He's got a championship ring. This is a really stupid thing that he did. But he's always been considered fringe on dirty player. And lately, he's been a whiner, a complainer. And when he was a great player, you would tend to overlook that.
Gave him a pass.
Now it's becoming a little wearisome that every 3 days or so, he's complaining about something else.
Man, there's a lot of the trash talking. He's always done that. But as a guy gets older and he doesn't have the same skill set, let me ask you this, though.
By the way, Quentin Richardson, you make that trade 100 times out of 100.
Yes, but does
you
Quentin
take out
Richardson
money,
deserve a bigger penalty? Do you think Q was the instigator? Did he have something more coming to him?
If it was official that he was the instigator,
right,
they should have sat him down too. But obviously the league didn't feel
think so.
That
elbow,
way.
Elbow trumps everything.
Yes.
Let's move to another tall, talented Kevin Durant. His playoff debut was a little different than the regular season. Ron Artest harassed KD.
Is that what they call him, KD?
Well, I do.
Okay.
In the 7-for-24 shooting. He got roughed up. He got his shot blocked. Durant thinks he got looks he normally makes. I think the only good look Durant got yesterday was at Artest's hideous blonde hair. Tony, is Phil Jackson going to keep Durant down the whole series, or is the kid going to figure out a way to put the ball in the hole?
I'm going to use the Alexander Ovechkin analogy, that in game one for Alexander Ovechkin, he's a prolific scorer. He's got more shots on goal than anybody in the league. Didn't get any.
No shots.
And his
on
coach
goal.
Called him out, and he comes back the next night, and he gets one goal and three assists. So I think Durant, this is the first playoff game ever.
Yep.
I don't think he was prepared for the clip of the game, how quickly that it goes. Ooh. I think he took too much on his shoulders. I think Phil Jackson unnerved him. But I think this will be the worst game he has.
The worst game?
Yes.
I don't know about the worst game. I think he's going to have some poor shooting games. And you have to get around that in the playoffs, Tony.
That's 24 points.
That you said, yeah, but 24 shots. Anybody can do that. Anybody in the league can get 24 shots and put up 24 points. They may have to change a little bit. Okay, and Russell Westbrook, who is
you love him.
Stud.
You love him as player.
Who a couple times hit right at Kobe and right at Artest. Oops, I mean around and over them. They may have to tilt a little of this to him until they can free up Durant. But the Lakers, Tony, did flex yesterday. And like you said,
Lakers are better.
They had been bored. Yesterday they weren't
the
bored.
Lakers are better than Oklahoma
they
City.
They are better.
But Durant will show better than this.
He'll score more. You think they'll get a game in the next game or two?
Yeah, I think they'll get one game.
Sure, I do.
Okay. The San Jose Sharks lost in overtime last night when their player, Dan Boyle, mistakenly flipped the puck past Evgeny Nabokov and into his own goal. That was the only score in the entire game. Now, clearly, this is a terrible way to lose. San Jose's coach will undoubtedly tell his players, hey, get over it. Wilbon, can they?
I think he can get over this.
Really?
Because you know
heartbreaking.
It is such a fluke. Yes, it's heartbreaking, and particularly, Tony, because this isn't the first time San Jose's been through this. Maybe own goal. They've had some Gagarino situations
number one seed.
They've done this before. Maybe they can't get over the accumulation of it. We know some franchises in other sports, I'm not going to mention any names, that have problems
in the whole game. They have outshot. San Jose has outshot Colorado. I have the number somewhere. 103-39.
You know what that means?
In the last two games.
That means somebody's goaltender
Oh, the other guy
is
51
dominating
saves.
The series.
Craig Anderson.
And that's the bigger problem here. I don't care who you are. When you face a goal, we've seen this with teams. We even with Dominic Hasek, before he got on Detroit, he was on some teams that were, they were all right. He could control the series. That's one of the things San Jose's facing,
but
including their own history.
You think they come back? See, I'm not sure that they do, because I think you can come back losing 5-0.
Right.
But I don't know about losing like this when you give
crusher.
Such a great effort. Well, here's the person I worry about is not the guy who knocked it in. Because he'll be absolved. It's the goalie who then begins to think, I am cursed. I cannot win. Look at what happened to me. Because he was in position to block the shot.
You know who's got to earn, get his guys back this series? It's not the captain. It's not the goaltender. It's not the guy who got the own goal. It's the coach. It's a coaching staff situation to rally those guys at this point.
Really? You think the coaches are out on the ice when that happens?
No, they better be in the dressing room getting in people's heads.
Okay.
The NHL has been moving quickly and boldly to eliminate hits to the head. But don't tell that to the Pittsburgh Penguins. After their Jordan Leopold was crushed by Ottawa's Andy Sutton.
Oof.
6'6", 245 pounds of him. It wasn't even called for a penalty on the play. Now, Ottawa's GM Brian Murray called it a clean hit.
Yeah, I guess he would.
The Penguins are angry, of course. Leopold is out indefinitely. Sutton, meanwhile, played in Game 3 after this hit Friday night. Tone, I thought the NHL was going to be tough on head hits. What happened?
You know, I imagine I thought he'd be suspended because I thought there was the head hitting carried with an automatic suspension.
Yeah.
But I guess that's just blindside head hits and not something where his head was down.
Or elbows to the head.
Yeah. Now, to me, that is a vicious hit. Look, hockey guys are tough, but it's not football. It's not. Football is based on collisions. Hockey's not based on collisions. This was a Jack Tatum situation. If this guy goes out indefinitely and never plays and the NHL takes a position like, no big deal. That's hard to work with when you say that head hits are bad.
My problem, even more than the actual hit, Tony, is what you're talking about now. The NHL comes out and it flexes, and it's John Wayne one day.
But we agree.
On these head hits.
We all agree that it was a great thing that they did.
Yes, but then you have to live with it and enforce
yes.
it. You can't just say, we're going to ignore that one. Why? Because he's too big a star, because you don't want to penalize that team, because Ottawa doesn't normally hit like that.
The other
like
guy was 6'4", 245.
6'6", 245. If you're going to have rules, then enforce the rule.
That's like linebacker status.
It is. It's like defensive end
crumbled.
Status.
Boom. See you. 35-year-old Brian Davis, who has never won a PGA tournament, birdied 18 at Hilton Head yesterday to force a playoff with Jim Furyk. On their first playoff hole, Davis hit it into the schmutz down by the water.
The schmutz.
And hit a reed on his backswing of the chip to get to the green. Davis called a two-shot penalty on himself, eliminating all chance to win. Well, von golfers always call penalties on themselves, but he hit a reed. He didn't give himself any advantage. What do you think of this rule and the self-policing action?
Self-policing, fine. That's part of the honor of golf. This
yeah.
rule's stupid. What was he supposed to do? Take an unplayable? I mean, what? He was going to hit something on his way back. Did you not see these blades
behind
it?
I think if it's determined, I'm probably going to get this wrong. If it's determined that it's a loose impediment.
As opposed to rooted?
Yeah, that it...
So we got to be a gardener now to play golf?
In essence, you have to have
stupid,
an agronomy degree.
And there's 500 rules in the book that are stupid. They just are. And they're antiquated. Time's out for these rules. Get rid of them.
All
Seriously.
Of the rules. It's like, how many NCAA rules are stupid?
Most of them. Yeah.
But they start... Because they're rooted in something important.
I'll give you that.
Because you and I, if we're down there in the schmutz, we're hacking away to try and get a clean shot in. And you can't have golfers do that. You can't have them carry a John Deere into the hazard.
Okay, but you know what? He didn't do any of that. And so there's the letter of the rule, and then there's the practicality and the intent. This is junk. And it's $400,000 it costs this guy, right?
If he wins his first tournament, it's money and exemption.
And exemptions.
You know what
the PGA should do?
What?
Even
hand
if they
money?
Can't make up the money, give him the exemption.
Because he's honorable.
Reward the honor.
That's
but
right.
do it.
That's right. Let's take a break. But coming up, could John Gruden have heard a quarterback's draft stock?
And Joakim Noah cracks on Cleveland. Fair or foul?
He's your boy, right?
I love Noah.
But?
I love Noah.
Get the latest soccer news both on and off the field with the SoccerNet podcast. Download it now at the iTunes Music Store and at Pod Center at ESPNRadio.com.
The NFL draft starts on Thursday this week. Thursday. That means Mel Kiper will be haunting you for 3 days. And what do you know? Here he is now. You ready, Mel?
I'm ready, Tom.
Here we go. Tim Tebow has won a ton of pub for all the changes to his throwing motion. They may make him a better player, but have they made him a higher draft choice?
I thought going into this whole draft process, he'd be a second or third round pick. He's solidly, I think, in the second round, Tony. That's as high as I think he'll go. Maybe late first. I could be proven wrong there, but I think the elongated delivery is being tweaked. The question I have is, once muscle memory sets in and the bullets start flying on game day, will he revert back to his old throwing motion, which I don't think will get it done in the NFL. So I think there's some issues. I've said all along, I think H-back is the best position for Tim Tebow, and I think 3 or 4 years into his NFL career, I think that's a position he'll ultimately will play.
All right, Mel. Tony already mentioned the draft starting on Thursday, giving us 3 days. 3 days. Is all of that time going to change the way teams actually draft players?
That's a great question, Michael. I think for the teams, they'll have a chance to redo their boards, get in touch with players and agents, and really prepare a little bit more thoroughly than being rushed after a long day into the wee hours of the night. Then you talk about getting up early and trying to get it done. I think for now, with day one being just round one, day two, round two and three, not starting until the evening, they'll have that extra time to get everything together that they need and not rush into anything. So I think for everybody involved, I think it'll be a lot better.
John Gruden was on TV and he broke down the styles and attributes of the top quarterbacks. Could anything that he did in that session positively or negatively affect their draft stock?
You know, I think maybe teams will look at it and say, just like they do with anything they retone, they will factor everything in. But at this stage of the game, you have made your decisions. You have made your determination as to who you think can play and can't play, who you want to be part of your organization and who you don't. So I don't think there's anything can be written or said at this particular point in the process to affect an NFL's team's decision on where they go.
All right, Mel, let's stay on the topic of quarterback. The Steelers have indicated they will not take a quarterback early. Do you necessarily believe that?
I don't think they will. I think they have needs at wide receiver now with Santonio Holmes now a New York Jet. I think they can wait maybe, Michael, until the second round and look at maybe a Taylor Price from Ohio, a Brandon LaFell from LSU, and Aurelius Ben from Illinois. There are a lot of good receivers are going to go in rounds 2, 3, 4, and 5. Carlton Mitchell's a nice kid out of South Florida. I think in the third or fourth round could be a good pick. Andre Roberts out of the Citadel. So they can maybe wait on wide receiver, but they need a corner. They need an interior offensive lineman, be it a guard or center, maybe a Marquise Pouncey out of Florida. So they have so many need areas. I think they could maybe wait and try to find a quarterback maybe day three of the draft that can get it done. A couple names there would be John Skelton, a kid out of Fordham, Matt Nichols, a kid out of Eastern Washington. So maybe wait until the fifth, sixth, seventh round and take one of those two kids.
I didn't even know Fordham had a football team. How great is that? Only one team attended Myron Rolls' pro day. One team. There's comments, of course, about how intelligent he is and how many outside interests he has. Would that scare teams away from drafting him?
Well, I think your focus 365 days a year has to be football. Myron Rolle, obviously, is a tremendously intelligent young man, great quality kid, character, all the intangibles you want. But I think the focus on football and making that your number one priority in terms of the business you want to get into is something NFL teams are looking for. But I do think Myron Rolle in the fifth, sixth, seventh round may end up coming off the board.
Fifth, sixth, seventh round. Rhodes Scholar, wow. That's something
about, Rhodes Scholar.
About the draft that scares me. We have to talk about you for a second, Mel. This is sort of off look here, but we read in a feature in my newspaper, The Washington Post, that you don't go to the bathroom during the draft, which lasts about 100 hours. I don't believe this, Mel. There's something you left out, right?
No, I really don't. I think once in the last couple of years when we had a time period there where we could get away from the set, I may have, but didn't have to. No, it's not something that I feel a need to because I don't drink that much during the draft. I don't eat anything during the draft. So I'm just there trying to, and I don't like to come off the set because when you do, it takes a couple of picks to build that enthusiasm and intensity back up because you feel like you're getting a little rusty sitting away for a couple minutes. So I would like to just stay on the set. Locked in there from start to finish.
So should we put you down for a diaper or a bedpan?
Neither.
Okay.
I'm good.
As always, Mel, thanks so much for joining.
Thank you, Mel.
I appreciate it, Michael, Tony.
We love Mel. We're taking a break, but coming up, the debatable significance of a no-hitter.
And how big was the Suns' loss last night?
I couldn't go an hour. How about you? You're drinking right now. You're going to leave the set between takes.
I would leave the set while the kid's name was being called, while he was shaking hands with Roger Goodell. Did that he get in the NFL too?
That is self-control on Mel's part, isn't it?
Racing fans, get the latest news from NASCAR from the J-Ski Podcast featuring Mark Garrow. Download for free at iTunes or on the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com.
It's time for mail time, the time of the show. I wish I could take a bathroom break during
mail time.
I will get the first one.
No,
thank you.
You don't.
You ready?
Wish that. I'm ready.
How could the Suns lose at home to the Blazers playing without Brandon Roy? That is so weak.
It was worse than weak. Of the 16 playoff teams, only one didn't give a good accounting of itself. The Suns. Man, I know these guys. They have some ambition this year. They think they can get to the conference final at the very least.
Know them. You go to so many games, you want to be the mascot.
Uninspired performance. Down 9.
They're 100
didn't get Stoudemire to the line. Hey, the playoffs started. Phoenix Suns. You might want to check in.
The easiest game to lose and recover from is game one. If you lose game five, that's not a good situation.
Okay.
They are the better team, are they
Should
not?
Should lose game one.
Are they the better team?
Yes.
Okay, how often do real upsets happen in the first round? Almost never?
Almost never. But you shouldn't lose game one at home when the other team is minus their best player. And listen, let me tell you something. Nate McMillan has done a great job with Portland and all those injuries.
Best
Having
player.
Said that, still, Suns shouldn't lose that game. That's
you're
a
like
bad
a
loss.
Season ticket holder
it's a
there.
Bad loss.
Yeah, terrible.
Is Ubaldo Jimenez, no hitter, the announcement of a new young ace or just another fluky performance by a guy we're going to forget in a few years?
In the last 20 years, there have been 47 no-hitters. That's a lot of no-hitters. Yeah. Half of them by studs, half of them by guys who vanished. Supposedly, this guy is a stud, but his lifetime record is 34-28. That does not say to me Roger Clemens. My feeling about April no-hitters is they are more forgettable than pennant race September no-hitters.
Yeah, I agree.
And I pay attention to them.
See, April no-hitters. I know that this network made a huge deal out of the no-hitter. No-hitters are cool. They're fun. I've never seen one in person with all the baseball I've covered in my life. I've never seen one in person, but I've seen April no-hitters. And I know other factors, pitching should be ahead of hitting,
yes.
Weather factors, not that it was a factor there, particularly. I remember Bert Hooten, when I was
this
a pretty good
to be
pitcher,
great,
had a second day no-hitter.
Supposed
to be great. Don't project.
Who knows?
You can know.
Tony La Russa pitched two position players during Saturday's epic 20-inning loss to the Mets. And he said he would have pitched Rick Ankiel if Ankiel were still on the Cardinals. Would that have been a good idea?
Look, Tony La Russa is in constant contact with Rick Ankiel, and he knows where he is, I guess, psychologically, knows if he's up, knows if he's not up. But to me, when I heard that, I
shuddered.
I did.
Shuddered.
Because to me, why would you put him in a situation where there's pressure to pitch ever again? I don't understand that.
La Russa put Ankiel in the playoffs as a very, very young pitcher, and his career was crushed. He came back resurrected as an everyday player, which is great, and La Russa should have a lot of the credit as far as that goes. But if I were Ankiel, the last place on earth I'd want to be is on the mound.
In a real game.
Place. On the
no
bump.
No chance.
Is that what they say, the bump?
Maybe he was just sort of overstating it purposely, and hopefully it won't ever come to that.
He's in Kansas City.
For Rick Ankiel. After calling Kevin Garnett a dirty player, Joakim Noah offered up his opinion that Cleveland, as a city, sucks. Criticizing Cleveland, fair or foul?
Now, I know that Noah is your boy.
Love Noah.
But the only people who ought to criticize Cleveland are people who live and work in Cleveland. Noah should shut his fat yap.
And you're criticizing the New York kid.
The reception, I understand, born in New York, he probably looked at Chicago like Rube Land when he went there. This kid ought to cut his ponytail and wear glasses for the game tonight because he is not going to be warmly received in the city of Cleveland.
It doesn't matter. They're not going to be warmly received there. They hate the Bulls, and they should. I'm going to broaden it a little bit. I think you could take a shot if you're a Midwestern person. If Detroit people take a shot at Chicago,
he's a New York person.
He's a New Yorker. No, as Dikembe would say.
We believe in New York.
Bounds.
We can take shots at everyone.
I know you
but
do.
But not at Cleveland.
But you know what?
This
is an opponent and a rival city and a rival team.
What's
I'm
that
okay
restaurant
with.
I like there? Johnny's? Is that the restaurant in Cleveland that I like?
I know Fratello picked
it.
Up the tab. Time I know that much.
He sure did, and it was large. And on the way, Pop calls his players dogs.
And can anyone really get upset about a brawl in MMA?
Fratello, the mayor of Cleveland.
Fratello, we haven't paid for a lot of meals in Cleveland.
The mayor
you and I.
Of Cleveland.
We owe. Old as czar, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Certainly you.
I do. I think it was Johnny's. Think. Happy time, people. Happy 27th birthday, Joe Mauer. The Minnesota Twins broke their bank to keep hometown Mauer on the roster for the next 8 years. Last year's MVP off to a hot start, hitting 378 with 10 RBI in 13 games, and the Twins are in first place in the AL Central.
I like Joe Mauer, but not nearly as much as two other people celebrating birthdays today, Ashley Judd and Kate Hudson.
Prettier than Joe Mauer.
Absolutely.
A not-so-happy anniversary to Maurice Claret and Mike Williams. On this day 6 years ago, he got tossed out of the NFL draft. Both players wanted the same underclassmen rules for the NFL that the NBA had then, which is to say anybody could go in at any time. The NFL stood fast to their 3-year post-high school waiting period.
And the NBA needs to go up to 2 years. And even though I know you like everybody to be able to go in, you sort of agree, don't you?
Not philosophically. Happy trails, Mehmet Okur. The Jazz center is done for the playoffs with a torn Achilles tendon. The Jazz has been hit particularly hard lately, with Andre Kirilenko also out. Down 0-1, Utah's at Denver tonight.
Injuries are killing the playoffs. Portland, even though they won that game. Utah, Andrew Bogut at Milwaukee, which I think would be playing much better if they had him.
Time to find out what we messed up, reality.
Don't think I didn't hear what you said about Ford and football, Tom.
Didn't know they had
seven
football.
Blocks of granite all up in your face. You like Vince Lombardi?
That's a long time ago.
Thank us later. All right. Eric Gagne has retired, according to RueFrontenac.com. And Kevin Garnett, 19th all-time in minutes played in the NBA ABA World Bond. Jason Kidd ahead of him on that list at 14.
Really? That's a lot of
shout
minutes.
Shout out to you. Shout
out fame. To Hall of Fame. Season finale on FX of Damages, one of my favorite TV shows, tonight at 10 o'clock.
Watch I'm going to shout out to Robert Chariot.
Who's that?
Kenya, who won the Boston Marathon
today. I've heard his name before.
Yes, but he's not the same Robert Chariot who won four times before. It's a different Robert Chariot. Different one. Swing low, sweet chariot.
Very strange.
We're taking a break. There's more PTI to come, including the Yum Center.
We're back in a few minutes. Until then, let's toss it up to Sports.
Good night, Canada. The Yum Center, please. Welcome back to the PTI program. Okay, Mike, back in the day, Kevin Garnett's elbow would have seemed a lot more run-of-the-mill. Has the NBA become too sensitive to guys mixing it up?
My first reaction is yes, because I followed the league as both a kid and a reporter when it seemed like every time out had somebody throwing an elbow.
Right.
And, you know, it didn't seem nobody seemed any worse for wear. But I understand that now when you look at what happens with crowd and crowd control and people want to be interactive and they want to be participatory, you can't have that. And the image of leagues is more important now than it was in the 70s and even the 80s. And all leagues want to get rid of this stuff. I understand, I acquiesce, but I kind of liked the old way.
I think image is part of it. I think that everything is on TV all the time is part of it. So you're always worried who's going to see you and what are they going to say.
Right.
I think another part of it is that the labor force makes a whole lot more money than they used to. They are more of an investment than they ever used to be. And if you're the owner, the last thing on earth you want is a guy you're paying $8 to $10 to $14 million taking an elbow in the puss and being out for 4 days. You can't have that. And I think commissioners have to be cognizant of the fact that these guys are worth more money.
You know, I remember an incident, one of my favorite NBA incidents. And I shouldn't say favorite, but it is. May 27, 1987. So this has been 23 years ago. Robert Parrish and Bill Laimbeer got into a thing, and Laimbeer had been just antagonizing the Celtics the whole series, where Robert Parrish just took both hands, bam, bam,
right,
to his head,
but you
knocked him to the floor, and the ref said, play on. Like, get up, Bill.
You hated Laimbeer because he played for Detroit and you rooted for Chicago.
But come on now. I mean, that,
and now you love
suspensions
Laimbeer
all over the place.
1 minute left, we go to the big finish.
He's warm and fuzzy now.
Greg Popovich said, quote, we had a lot of guys play like dogs.
Wow.
After the Spurs lost to the Mavs, you surprised?
A little bit. And when Pop says that, people going to listen. Yeah. People going to listen on that team. The Magic beat the Bobcats. Dwight Howard had just 5 points. Is that a big deal?
Who won that game?
Magic.
Okay. Brandon Jennings had 34 in his NBA playoff debut, but his Bucks lost to the Hawks. You still impressed?
Who won that game? No, I am impressed, and I think the Bucks are going to make this a series. Louisville's new basketball arena is going to be called the KFC Yum Center. Good name. Yum, yum, yum.
Come on. That makes Dunkin' Donuts sound like Madison Square Garden. And Dominican Sue will donate $2 million to the Nebraska Athletic Department. You impressed?
Beyond impressed. Are you kidding? To do that before you even get out of the place is great. huge brawl at the end of the Strike Force event Saturday night. Big deal?
Isn't the Strike Force event a brawl of sorts? That was on CBS.
Because Johnson was calling it,
baby.
Last
one, the Golf U.S. Open will be broadcast in prime time this year from the coast. Good idea?
No, you watch golf with your dad or your uncle or your father-in-law in the afternoon. What are you doing,
NBC? Out of time. Trying to do better the next time. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're better than that. I'm Mike Wilbon. Same time tomorrow, Knuckleheads. Check out the podcast. Let's go to
bed. Dan Boyle, go to your room.